C2PR. Number 22A.
We come to the next prayer, the prayer of truth, and we will see here a completely different tone that runs right through the text, and that tone has a lot to do now with consciousness, especially spiritual consciousness, in comparison or in opposite to corporeal consciousness. And the epitome we have here, just to give the general tone, is the prayer of spiritual consciousness. You know, the consciousness is truth, which is close to error. That's the unself-love. You lay down something, namely that we close it to error, and it's open to truth. And that brings us into unity with the dominion of truth. So we'll see here that the form of spiritual understanding that is brought out is to have spiritual consciousness, and the form of the unself-love, which means you lay down a self, is here at the point of truth, to lay down error, an erroneous consciousness, so that it is open to truth. And if we have that spiritual consciousness, then we are brought into unity with truth. With what aspect of truth? With the dominion of truth. The healing power of truth. Here, like in the sixth day of creation, is introduced the term man. We learn to know something about man. And as we came out from the prayer of life, which always showed that we should start out from the source if we want to have a right effect. So here now, at the point of truth, we will see that we have to go back to a right concept of God, and therefore that the true consciousness of what constitutes God will have as its effect not so much something outside of us, but that we are men, that constitutes the wholeness of men. So, like in the 6 days of creation, it needs 5 days to bring the thought up to the point of the six, where we finally are acquainted with what constitutes the health of man. And also here, you have seen that the term man hardly entered except once, when she said that prayer is awakening us to God's likeness, but it was only awakening to it. But now, at the point of truth, we will see that we gain the form of man, the consciousness of what man is. So again, we must fall back on the cause, fall back, so to say, on the first 5 prayers up to life. And only if we go out from life and fill our consciousness with all that, then we have the consciousness of truth. We don't have then the consciousness of life, because we have then the consciousness of truth, because all those 5 gathered together are making up a consciousness. And so we have the consciousness of the Father, and then it's shown that this consciousness of God is compared with a material, corporeal consciousness, and then shown that this consciousness of truth has a Christ, has a Savior, namely that the true consciousness is then overcoming or replacing corporeal consciousness. And actually, the moment we can see that so much is established within us that we have a consciousness of truth, we feel we are men. Because what constitutes man is his consciousness. We are so much man as we are conscious of man. we are conscious of man as a corporeal being, as a body, well, then we regard ourselves as a body. But if we are conscious of man as a spiritual consciousness, and therefore contemplate only those constituents that constitute consciousness, then man is just consciousness. This is what we will see here. And an interesting point then is actually, when we come to this point, is that we see that then prayer does no more find an answer, but that prayer then at this point is the answer. At the point of truth, we really come to that point where we are no more having that attitude. Now, what will my attitude bring about? That's life. So we are no more looking towards an answer. Then we feel, if we have a consciousness of God, we are the answer. We are prayer fulfilled. There is no more something outside consciousness. So the best thing, I think, is if we again go right to the text and investigate the text. The text of truth is rather complex, because we have seen the moment we go a step further, we always have to take the preceding five with us. And actually, the further we go, the more we have to take with us as the preceding subjects. Truth as mind. If we pray to God as a corporeal person, so we get first the wrong concept of God as a corporeal person, this will prevent us from relinquishing the human doubts and fears which attend such a belief. And so we cannot grasp, you get at once the sense of mind, the wonders wrought by infinite incorporeal love, to whom all things are possible. Here see again, she starts now out with a second scriptural note right away and says, don't forget, actually, love always answers your prayers. Love has always answered your prayers. The wonders of love are always brought out to Lord, to all things are possible. Your Father knows, and he will supply it. So here she starts out by saying that, by taking first that second scriptural note. And then she begins to elaborate on that, because of human ignorance, mind, of the divine principle love, the Father of all is represented as a corporeal creator. See, she comes again back to line 20, and we'll see that over the next page or so. It's all about, do we have a corporeal God, or is our God the Father, life? Constantly we will hear, therefore, that tone of corporeality, because that's a general belief that people have, that God is a corporeal God. Hence, men recognize themselves as merely physical and are ignorant of man as God's image or reflection, and of man's eternal incorporeal existence. Can you see, it's all about corporeal God, corporeal man. If we have a corporeal God, we have a corporeal man. Why do we have that? Because that is only existing in our ignorance, in consciousness, in the wrong consciousness. If that consciousness is not geared towards the divine, as then it is actually geared to the corporeality, and we always will find that we have a corporeal sense of man. The world of error is ignorant of the world of truth. Again, ignorant. See, also it goes that ignorance, that we are ignorant about God, it's always a sense of mind. The positive would be that we know God. Blind, therefore, also to the reality of man's existence. Can you see always the what we are ignorant about the cause? We are ignorant about man, about the effect. It's all about the question, what kind of a consciousness do you have? Have you a consciousness of ignorance, or do you have a consciousness of knowing? For the world of sensation is not cognizant, cannot realize it. Again, to cognize is an idea of mind, is not cognizant of life in soul, not in body. So we have here a great sense of presenting first, do we know God or don't we know God? That's the very first aspect of our consciousness. It's our consciousness molded and formed the way that it takes in a corporeal God, then you know man as a corporeal being. But if you know God as an incorporeal God, then you will have an incorporeal sense of man. So what she wants to say is that what you entertain within you, that you are. It's no more so much like in life, the law of cause and effect, but now much more, what is the form of your consciousness? If you have, if you are not ignorant about God, then you are not ignorant about man. Also, the side note reads corporeal ignorance. So, text interpretation again would mean if you read a paragraph like that and see that the paragraph is full of terms like, I just read them down here, the side note is ignorance, it's corporeal ignorance, afterwards it's human ignorance, then it is ignorant of man and ignorant of the world of truth, then it's blind to the reality, not cognizant of life and soul, false recognition. Can you hear? You at once get the tone of mind, where you say, everything starts first by filling consciousness, not with ignorance, but naturally then with the true knowledge of God. So to put it into the positive, all this is actually in the negative, but we have seen it's absolutely legitimate to put something which is in the negative into the positive. So our epitome here would read, what is the prayer of spiritual consciousness? Now we would have seen in the negative, we have seen that always the term ignorance comes up. Well, in the positive, it would see that it is a knowledge, really, of the true God and the incorporeal man. This alone can grasp the wonders of God. I put that in, can grasp the wonders of God. I could have left that out because that is really the second scriptural note of love and mind, that those wonders of love can only be seen through a true recognition. Yes. That's very easy. So we go to the next one. You see, slowly we get on quicker because you have no more difficulty in reading the text in categories, in tonality. But when we come to the next point, we'll see at once that she's no more talking about ignorant, being blind, but that something quite different is coming up. So she says here, if we are sensibly with the body, see, we have to get used that now she talks about that corporeal God and corporeal man, so that the tone of corporeality, sense, physical sense, the tone, which has actually to do with soul, comes in, but it's only because that's the great comparison, that God is a corporeal being compared with that God is spirit and is the Father of all. So don't be sidetracked by that, because she has to take that in. So if we are sensibly with the body and regard omnipotence as a corporeal, material person whose ear we would gain, we are not, and now comes the point, absent from the body and present with the Lord. We are just the other way around. We are, if we put it into the positive, then we are present with the body and absent from the Lord. And you see at once, you have a sense of distinction coming in. Are you now with this or that? Again, the firmament of spirit comes in and says, the second step is always that you make a line of demarcation and say, where is your consciousness? Is your consciousness with the waters under the firmament or with the waters above the firmament? Is your consciousness with the corporeal God and man, or is your consciousness with the incorporeal God and man? That's just a question of distinction here. And you are already used to that, because you know that by now, from the days of creation, through what we have done here, that usually at the second point we get the separation, decision here in consciousness. Or present with the Lord in the demonstration of spirit. So we get demonstration, truth of spirit. Again, she says, we cannot serve two masters. Again, when we hear serving two masters, we know this is duality. We know this is the opposite of spirit, which is the only. We know at once this is wrong. We know at once we should make a decision, with which master are we? Can you see? And at once all that wells up in your consciousness, that you say, well, are you with the body or are you with the Lord? With both you cannot be. Huh? You cannot mix them. You hear the tone of spirit very easily. Huh? And so we cannot serve two masters. Again, she goes back to what she said, to be present with the Lord. Now that was already on line 4. To be present with the Lord is to have no mere emotional ecstasy or faith. But what? But the actual demonstration and understanding of life. Again, you have the separation, you say. Where is your consciousness? Is your consciousness with a wrong sense of prayer? Namely, the emotional sense of ecstasy or faith? Or is your consciousness with the spirit, with the understanding of life? Are you on the side of belief and faith and blind belief, or on the side of understanding? That you must decide. Again, to be with the Lord. Can you see? 3 times in this short paragraph comes, are we with the Lord or not? And so you can see at once that if that recurs and recurs, that you know this is really the tone that he wants to bring out. So to be with the Lord is to be in obedience to the law of God. To be absolutely governed by divine love, you get in love again, by, and then summing it up and say, what is the core of it? By spirit or by matter? So in spite that she shows what it means to be with the Lord, and somehow in brackets explains, well, to be with the Lord is what? You see, to be with the Lord is not to have mere emotional ecstasy or faith, but to be with the Lord is to be with, to be in obedience with the law of God. You see those two ways of being with the Lord? Therefore, to be absolutely governed by divine love, by spirit or by matter. So, can you also see that that in text interpretation we must be very clear, that we don't interpret the bull there in that first picture? That in text interpretation you interpret that 12th. Is it the 12th? Yes, the 12th picture, right at the bottom, right bottom. That's text interpretation. That bull on the top of the first one, that's a text. It shows exactly every little bit. It brings in all the nitty-gritties that has to be brought in order to make it plain. But what is necessary is to take only that out of the text which really gives to that text its structure. So that which gives to these paragraphs the structure is not so much to be in obedience with God and to be absolutely governed by divine love, because the point in here is what? Are we serving two masters? That is what repeats itself and repeats itself. So therefore, in epitomizing it or reducing it, we can easily leave out, or must leave out, naturally, various little side aspect of the text, additional explanatory notes and so on, in order to get the structure. So she comes right back again at the end, namely, are you serving spirit or are you serving matter? Was that clear? You know, the difficulty is when one explains text interpretation, especially when one then afterwards discusses this with other friends and is not quite sure. You can be quite sure that when they are not with you mentally, spiritually, that they will come up and say, well, you make that up, because here, black on white, Mrs. Eddy talks about obedience to the law of God, and she talks black on white here to be absolutely governed by divine love. So why do you think this has to do with spirit and matter? See? And that's always the difficulty, that they come in with actual texts, which we can't say it isn't in the text. What we have to be able is to find those few strokes there that Picasso had in order to paint that last picture. These are important. Those hairs and all what he has there, the bull has in the first picture, is not important. Once we have the last one, we know anyway that the bull has hair. That we know. We don't have to interpret that. But in order to see if that is a bull or if that is a horse, you have to have the structure, because the bull has another structure than a horse. Both have hair somewhere. So we have here that we get here a new consciousness, and in a way, if you look at it naturally in a finer way, one could go over it and see that she brings in all the preceding concepts of the preceding five prayers. Because she brings in that first that we should regard omnipotence, not as a material person, but as it was done in the first prayer, that we should regard God as he is, that is in a spiritual way. That we should not serve two masters, we have a touch of spirit. Then she says that we should not have any emotional ecstasy in prayer. What is that? Soul, the prayer of soul. Then she said that we should have an obedience to the law of God. That was the fourth prayer, where the Jesus' commandment was, keep my commandments, and to be absolutely governed by God. And finally, she says always to be present with the Lord. You have a sense of the ever-presence of life in the fifth prayer. And all that is consciousness. All that builds up our consciousness. That's how we regard it. The way we regard it is our form of consciousness. And even more, then she says, and this will have the actual demonstration and understanding of life. So that, see, now comes the sixth in it, we are in the sixth prayer, says that consciousness which takes in all the preceding five one has the actual demonstration, which is truth.